Morning, everyone. It's good to have each one here this morning. Again, welcome to our visitors. We're so glad for each one of you that's here this morning. I'm going to ask you to bear with me a little bit. My voice is kind of on the fritz, so we'll see how long it goes before it gives out. Murray, I appreciated what you had to share on service. It's an excellent segue into the message, and I love the thought of quality service is service that's actually a part of our lives. It's such an integral part of our lives that we don't think about it when we do it. It's simply a part of who we are. It's the reality of Christ working through us in such a way that when people see us, they don't see us, but they see Christ. The title of the message this morning is Keep Your Hand on the Plow. I'd like to talk about commitment. And the text verse is going to be out of Luke 9, verse 62. And Jesus said unto him, No man, having put his hand to the plow and looking back, is fit for the kingdom of God. A number of things that I thought about, I've been thinking about, that kind of felt like the Lord was leading this direction here through this, through these past couple weeks. The feeling that sometimes it's just life is just kind of hard, and there's things that come up that are just kind of hard, and it would feel good just to kind of give up or just let somebody else take over for me. I'm sure many of you have heard of the term sleeper agents. It's a term that's often used in espionage. Also, in various uprisings and in terrorism, it's basically when you have a person or a group of people who blend in with the populace at large. They just fit in with everybody else, but then when the time comes for that they need somebody to do some crucial spying or blow something up or create havoc, then they tell those people. And so essentially they're a hypocrite. They can blend in, and then all of a sudden they come booming out and do this wonderful, great deed for their side. And as Christians, sometimes it can be a temptation, I believe, to act like sleeper agents. We just want to kind of blend in with everybody else. We don't really want to stand out. We don't want to work too hard. We just kind of want to fit in. But, when God has a big thing for me, oh yeah, I'm going to be there. I'll be there when God has a big thing for me. But in the meantime, I'm just going to kind of fit in with everybody else. God doesn't work that way. God doesn't use sleeper agents. God can only use people who are committed to Him all the time. Some key differences between a sleeper agent and what God requires of His people is sleeper agents, their whole purpose is destruction. As children of God, we are to be builders. It's easy to tear something down. Those of you who have ever done a remodeling job know that pulling out the old walls and stuff, that's the easy part. It's when you have to go back and put all the new stuff in. That's when you start wondering if this was really a good idea or not. Sleeper agents, also a big part of their job is to create unrest, make everybody nervous and afraid. Is that what God calls us to? No, He calls us to peace. To be peacemakers. And again, sleeper agents are hypocrites. They're not who they pretend to be, and that is not who God calls us to be. God calls us to be true to Him all the time. So I'd like to look at some thoughts on commitment. First of all, why it's important that we have commitment, why it's important that we commit. And one reason, of course, is that it's required of God. And that verse I just read in Luke 9, 62, about putting your hand to the plow and not looking back. Another is in Matthew 24, verse 13. But he that shall endure to the end, the same shall be saved. 1 Corinthians 16, 13. Watch ye, stand fast in the faith. Quit you like men, be strong. Revelation 3, 11. Behold, I come quickly. hold that fast which thou hast, that no man take thy crown. So here's a number of verses where it talks about the importance of commitment, of steadfastness. Now, commitment in and of itself isn't worth a whole lot if we're not committed to the right cause. You can be as committed as you want to something negative, and it's not going to produce a positive result. I remember reading a number of years ago about a football player who was he wanted to make it big so badly, but he never could quite get there. And finally, in a big game, he got his chance. They ran out of all the other players, and he was the substitute of a substitute of a substitute. But he finally got on there, and he was going to show them. He was going to show them how it was done, and show them that he was worth something. Sure enough, ball came flying down there. He caught the pass. He took off running as hard as he could go, and the opposing team, it's just like they couldn't catch him. Just before he scored, one of his own teammates tackled him. He was running the wrong direction. He was committed. He was going to get this thing done, but he was going the wrong way. So commitment in and of itself isn't what we're looking for. We need to be committed to the cause of Christ. Commitment is the way to efficacy. We must care about people in order to have impacts in their lives. If you think back in your life, think of the people who have had the most influence in your life. Who was it? Was it somebody you had a chance encounter with that you've talked to maybe once or twice? Or was it maybe your parents or a brother or sister or somebody that, a friend maybe, that you've spent many, many hours and days with? Those are the people that have had influence on you. And it's the same thing that's going to be true in your effectiveness. It takes commitment if you're actually going to be effective. For overcoming your temptations, you have to be committed to victory each time you face a struggle. Strong friendships come from years of going through thick and thin. Success in business comes from lots of hard work. Commitment defines purposes or values. It builds convictions, or at least it highlights our convictions. The people that care about nothing can commit to nothing. And generally, they're effective at nothing. It guides research. If you think about doctors and other professionals, they spend their entire lives focused on one vein of research. And that is what creates specialists. We love specialists. If we have something difficult that we're dealing with, whether it's something in a practical sense where we need somebody who is expert at sealing leaks in roofs, to somebody who's a specialist in a health profession. Those are the kind of people we like to go to. Well, it has taken years and years of dedication and commitment and study for them to be able to be that. And our commitment to Christ is the same. If we want to be able to rise up to those challenges that Christ has for us, that those times where life requires extra strength, where the difficulties that we face require extra fortitude, we're going to have had that commitment. We're going to have put in that hard work so that we can be there in those times. Commitment gives us settled strength, because knowing that we have a clear goal in mind gives stability. In Joshua 2, you can turn there with me if you like. I'm just going to read a few verses out of there. Joshua 2, verses 22 through 24. And this was after the spies had left Rahab's house, those two spies. And now think about it, they'd gone through quite a bit. They'd had to hide under a pile of flax. For those of you who have ever worked in a hay field, you know how uncomfortable piles of loose debris can be. And these guys had to be suffocated under this pile of flax so they wouldn't get killed. And then they had to climb down over a city wall with a little rope. wasn't an easy thing at all that they had faced. But this is what they said in verses 23 through 24. And they went and came unto the mountain and abode there 3 days until the pursuers were returned. So this is after they came out of Jericho. And the pursuers sought them throughout all the way, but found them not. So the two men returned and descended from the mountain and passed over and came to Joshua the son of Nun and told him all the things that befell them. And they said unto Joshua, truly the Lord hath delivered into our hands all the land, for even all the inhabitants of the country do faint because of us. Why could they feel that way? They had just spent days feeling faint because of the inhabitants of the land. They were hiding under the flax. They had to climb over the wall in the middle of the night. They were hiding in the mountain. They were stuck up there until finally everybody else just gave up and went home. And then they had to go creeping back and cross over Jordan. And they'd had a rough time, but that's not what they were worried about. They said, oh, they're scared of us. Why could they say that? It's because they had a clear goal in mind, and they were committed to that goal, and it gave them a settled strength that they wouldn't have had otherwise. Now, in commitment, there are, I guess I would call them realities of commitment, and that would be some of the difficulties that we might face in commitment. One is that it self-defines as long-term. It's not something that happens quickly. When we're committed, we're in it for the long haul, and we are working for results that we ourselves may never see. There are cathedrals in Europe that have been under construction for 300 years. The architect that designed it knew it would never be finished in his lifetime, but he was committed to it anyway. And there are lots of things in our lives that are that way. We may never see the full results of the work we put in. So it takes a vision beyond ourselves, as well as a dogged determination. As humans, we like quick results. We like things that happen quickly. When I was in Bangladesh, there was a group of police that were called RAB, Rapid Action Battalion. And they were the elite. They dressed in black, and they would park on street corners, and anything would go sideways. Oh, they were the ones that would go shooting in there quick. But they were also incredibly cocky, snobby guys. They were the quick response. And often that's a little bit too much the way we are. We like these, you know, we're going to get in there and get something done. But when we do that, often the focus comes back on ourselves. Look what I did. Look at me. See what all I accomplished. When, as committed Christians, that focus should be going to God. Commitment can be hard work. I'm not going to read the whole story there, but Gideon in Judges 8, he had taken his 300 men. They had gone down to this huge army of Midianites in the middle of the night. You know, and Gideon was already, he'd been stressed out for a while because he'd finally got this army together, and then God whittled it down. He went down, he didn't sleep, he went down to the camp in the middle of the night and saw these soldiers talking about the dream they'd had, and it was an encouragement to him, but he still hadn't slept. So he'd been going for quite a while, and then they attacked this huge host and his 300 men. They had to work hard, and they went, you know, the Midianites, they had to chase them. So these 300 men started chasing them, and verse 4 in Judges 8 says, and Gideon came to Jordan and passed over, he and the 300 men that were with him, faint, yet pursuing them. This huge army that still outnumbered them, many to one, they were still pursuing them. They were so tired out, they were worn out. They came to one city, they said, could you help us? Could you give us some bread? And that city said, nope. And they said, we're going to get you when we come back through. And they went to the next city and they said, can you help us? Can you give us some food? We're worn out. And they said, nope. And he said, we're going to get you when we come back through. And they were committed to chasing these people all the way to the end. And they did. And that's commitment. They were worn out. They were tired out. But they kept going. People didn't help them. You would think that these people would have said, you poor guys. But they had seen this huge army of Midianites that came through, and they said, there's no way that these 300 are going to be able to do anything to them. And so if we help them out, Midianites are going to come back and get us. And so they weren't about to help. But Gideon didn't allow that to stop him. He went charging ahead anyway. And that's hard. That's hard work to do that. When we're worn out and the only thing that's keeping us going is the reality that we have to keep on going. But that's what Gideon did. And he conquered. Commitment is unpopular. I just read a study recently. It was done in 2019. That for Americans under age 50, more say that it's better to just live together than to actually get married. Why do you think that is? It's because they're afraid of commitment. They're afraid things might not work out. There are in the U.S. there are many more people that are married than are just living together. So you can't just go by what people say they think the way things should be. But for Americans under age 50, that's what the majority of them say, is that they think it would be better just to live together than to get married. Commitment is seen as boring. It's much more fun to skip from one thing to another. And as a teenager, I know I became wildly interested in one thing after another. You know, I'm not sure what all you guys get interested in, but I was interested in trapping, then I was interested in basketball, and then I was interested in hunting, and then I was interested in kayaking, and then I was in, you know, there was this boom, you know, pursue that, oh, you know, and this is going to be my life's work. And then, you know, 2 weeks later, you know, this is going to be my life's work. And that's kind of the popular idea in the world at large as well. Hopefully we kind of grow out of that. But those can be good at that age, kind of broaden your knowledge on various things. But as you get older, we need to focus. It's not glamorous to be committed because you can be working in obscurity. It's restrictive. The world says you should be able to follow your whims. You should be able to do what you want to. You shouldn't have to work at a job that you don't enjoy. And it's difficult for people to hold down a job because they constantly need new stimulation. Interesting tidbit is that married young adults earn more than the unmarried young adults who cohabitate. So the probable reason for that is that the same lack of commitment that says I don't want to get married is the same lack of commitment that says I can't keep a job. So that's the other side of that. It's seen as narrow by people that are afraid of commitment. Adam Clark says, Christianity, as it is generally exhibited, has little attractive in it. And it is no wonder that the cross of Christ is not prized, as the blessings of it are not known. And they can be known and exhibited by him only who follows Christ fully. So in other words, maybe one reason why commitment is so unpopular is that it hasn't been seen very often. And that onus falls back on us. And there's biblical examples of people that we think of as having been pillars who also went through times where they didn't feel like committing. They were feeling faint, just like Gideon was. So I'm going to read a list here. I'm sorry, y'all are being very long-suffering with my voice here. I'm not going to make much comment on this, but just some examples of some biblical characters who were committed, but found that it was kind of hard sometimes. Abraham, in Genesis 22:2, and he said, "Take now thy son, thine only son Isaac, whom thou lovest, and get thee into the land of Moriah, and offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains which I will tell thee of." Imagine how difficult that commitment to God must have been. Yes, you've been following me. So, because you've been following me so well, I want you to take your son and sacrifice him. Moses, Numbers 14:2, "And all of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron. And the whole congregation said unto them, Would God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God we had died in this wilderness? That was after all Moses had endured. Now think of this from Moses' point of view. He had grown up in the palace. He could have stayed there. He could have been the Pharaoh himself. He could have been at least a prince. He could have had things nice. He could have been enslaving these very people that were murmuring against him and had them working for him. And instead, he'd given that all up. And now they're saying, "Oh, you're the reason that we're in such terrible straits right now. I wish you would have just left us stay back in Egypt." Job then said his wife unto him, "Dost thou still retain thine integrity? Curse God and die." Now it says that Job was a godly man. Every day he sacrificed. Every day he was committed. And look what the straits that he's in here. David, in Psalm 22, verse 2. "O my God, I cry in the daytime, but thou hearest not, and in the night season, and am not silent." And this was written when he was fleeing from Saul in the wilderness of Ziph, and he was feeling like he was all alone. He thought he was doing what God wanted him to do, and here he felt like God didn't even hear him anymore. Peter, in Matthew 16, "From that time forth began Jesus to show unto his disciples how that he must go into Jerusalem and suffer many things of the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be killed and be raised again the third day." Then Peter took him and began to rebuke him, saying, "Be it far from thee, Lord, this shall not be unto thee." The realities of total commitment were overwhelming to Peter. Paul, 2 Corinthians chapter 11. "Are they ministers of Christ? I speak as a fool. I am more. In labors more abundant, in stripes above measure, in prisons more frequent, in deaths oft. Of the Jews 5 times received I 40 stripes, save one. Thrice was I beaten with rods. Once was I stoned. Thrice I suffered shipwreck. A night and a day have I been in the deep. In journeyings often, in perils of waters, in perils of robbers, in perils by mine own countrymen, in perils by the heathen, in perils in the city, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among false brethren, in weariness and painfulness, in watchings often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and nakedness, besides those things that are without, that which cometh upon me daily, the care of all the churches." So the price of commitment was on full display in the life of Paul. He knew what it meant. He knew the difficulties, and it was hard. And even Jesus himself, Matthew 26, "And he took with him Peter and the 2 sons of Zebedee, and began to be sorrowful and very heavy. Then saith he unto them, My soul is exceeding sorrowful, even unto death. Tarry ye here and watch with me. And he went a little further and fell on his face and prayed, saying, O my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou wilt. And he cometh unto the disciples and findeth them asleep, and saith unto Peter, What, could ye not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray that ye enter not into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. He went away again the 2nd time and prayed, saying, O my Father, if this cup may not pass away from me, except I drink it, thy will be done. And he came and found them asleep again, for their eyes were heavy. And he left them and went away again and prayed the 3rd time, saying the same words." 3 times in the garden, Jesus prayed that this cup could pass from him, if it was the Father's will. He knew the price of commitment. He knew it full well. Now, on the flip side of that, we have the blessing of commitment. And these same men that I just read passages that talked about the difficulties that they faced, these same men came on through that. They were committed, and they found the blessings of commitment. Abraham, in James 2, says, "Was not Abraham our father justified by works when he had offered Isaac his son upon the altar? Seest thou how faith wrought with his works, and by works was faith made perfect. And the scripture was fulfilled, which saith, Abraham believed God, and it was imputed unto him for righteousness, and he was called the friend of God." He was so committed that God called him his friend. Can you imagine being that close to God, having a relationship that personal, that God calls you his friend? That was a blessing of commitment for Abraham. For Moses, in Exodus 33:11, the Lord spake unto Moses face to face, as a man speaketh unto his friend. Again, Moses persevered in those difficulties of commitment. And look at the blessing he got out of it. He could talk to God face to face. And that's a relationship that doesn't spring up suddenly. It's one that comes through commitment. Job said, though he slay me, yet will I trust in him. But I will maintain mine own ways before him. He also shall be my salvation. For an hypocrite shall not come before him. Job understood that he couldn't be a sleeper agent. He understood that it was only through a committed life that he could find that salvation of God. David, in Psalm 57, and this was written when he was still fleeing from Saul, but it was after the previous one that I read. He said, be merciful unto me, O God, be merciful unto me, for my soul trusteth in thee. Yea, in the shadow of thy wings will I make my refuge until these calamities be overpassed. I will cry unto God most high, unto God that performeth all things for me. He shall send from heaven and save me from the reproach of him that would swallow me up. Selah. God shall send forth his mercy and his truth. And if you read the rest of that psalm, it goes on to reaffirm over and over the trust and the confidence that David had in God. So even though earlier he had said, God, it doesn't feel like you can hear me, now he's saying, I know that you hear me. I know that you're there for me. Peter said, wherein ye greatly rejoice, though now for a season, if need be, ye are in heaviness through manifold temptations, that the trial of your faith, being much more precious than that of gold that perisheth, though it be tried with fire, might be found unto praise and honor and glory at the appearing of Jesus Christ, whom having not seen ye love, in whom though ye now see him not, yet believing, ye rejoice with joy unspeakable and full of glory, receiving the end of your faith, even the salvation of your souls. So from going from rebuking Jesus as he talked about things he would have to face, Peter now embraces persecution as a given, but also as a side note to the glory that was waiting. Paul said, henceforth there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day, and not to me only, but unto all them also that love his appearing. He was anticipating the reward of commitment, and Jesus said in Revelation 2, be thou faithful unto death, and I will give thee a crown of life. And Jesus knew what that meant, because he went through death. So he knows what that means when he says, be thou faithful unto death. Another blessing of commitment is that it gives us focus, gives meaning to our life and existence. Instead of aimless, hopeless wandering, we have a goal, an assignment. It helps intensify love for God. Partly the way it does that is by forcing us to rely on him through the difficult times. These Bible characters that I read through, the difficult things they went through, they were forced to rely on God in those times in a way they hadn't been before. It sharpens our worldview to that of God, and it brings into focus the things that he deems important, and it can help bring our focus in alignment with his. It's also needed for, or a blessing of commitment, is that we can be effective. If we truly care about those we meet, we can be effective. But when we open ourselves to love, and I remember someone saying this years ago, when we open ourselves to love, we also open ourselves to hurt. But if we close ourselves to love so that we're closing ourselves to hurt, we also are closing ourselves to being effective. Because God cannot work through a closed-off life. We have to be open enough to love that we can be hurt, that we can be effective. And a blessing of God that he gives us in commitment, many of those blessings are, we might say, intangible. It's not a physical thing, but they're real. when He gives us peace and joy. It's also a way to compassion, to empathy with others. There are tangible blessings as well. If we have a committed friendship, we have a good friend, and that's a tangible blessing. If we had a committed relationship with God, we can be a friend of God, and that can be a physical blessing. The outcome of commitment, one is a rooted and consistent life and example. Ephesians 4:14 says that we henceforth be no more children tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine by the sleight of man and cunning craftiness whereby they lie in wait to deceive. If we're committed, we're not easily swayed. I'm not talking about being dogmatic on a personal opinion, but being rooted enough that we can hold our convictions and we know where they are. We've all seen people who are ready to jump on every new thought, every new way of making money, every new invention, every new little thing that's done. This is now the greatest thing. That's now the greatest thing. This is the best way to make money. That's the best way to make money. And they leap back and forth between those, and they live a hectic, unproductive life. Commitment makes it possible to evaluate with at least a clearer mind. Now, being humans, we still make mistakes, obviously. But at least there is a consistent attempt to be strong. Reliability is an outcome of commitment. Ask an employer if he had to choose between two employees, the one that shows up to work every day and the one that comes when it's convenient, when he's not doing something else, when he doesn't have something that's, you know, something that's a little bit more important in his mind, ask him which one he's going to give a raise to at the end of the year. Reliable people often get more work stacked on them, but it's because people know they can rely on them. People can count on you if they know you keep your word and that you will consistently do your best. And God works the same way. God can use you in meaningful ways if He can count on you. An outcome of commitment is accomplishment. We can look back at work that we did to the best of our ability. And I know there are some here that have taken on some physical challenges, like biking 300 miles in 30 days, or running 500 miles in a year, or losing X amount of pounds, or something of the sort. And when we're done with that, we look back on that with a sense of accomplishment. And it gives us greater determination and also makes it easier maybe for us to commit to other things, because we can look back on something with a sense of accomplishment. And it's a job well done. For me, one of the things that I look back on with a sense of accomplishment is when I get my yard all mowed and weeded. It feels like a big yard and it takes me a long time. And when I'm all done, I like to just go up and sit on the deck and just look at it because it feels like a real accomplishment to me. Those of you that are in school, when you have an extra difficult assignment, but you get it done and you hand it in, that's a feeling of accomplishment that we get from commitment. Things get done by committed people. Who is more effective in leading a good team? Somebody who runs around shouting, or somebody who leads with a good example? I had a personal experience of this a number of years ago. I was at an airport, and there was a gate agent who was just determined to, I don't know what she was doing exactly, but she was definitely testing her vocal capabilities. And she was yelling just nonstop. And she got people so worked up. She was yelling, you know, you stand over here, you stand over there, you come in this line, whoa, you stop, you need these documents, you need those documents. And she got, these people were, I'm sure, you know, being a normal cross-section of humanity that flies out of Kansas City every day, the majority of them had probably flown before, were used to the boarding process where you go and hand your boarding pass and go down the jetway. She got everybody so flummoxed that a whole crowd of people went down the jetway without ever handing out over their boarding passes. And she caught it, you know, as they were disappearing down to the airplane. And so she bellowed down there, and they all came wandering back up, and then she made it feel like it was their fault. And so that's the feeling you get when you see somebody who's just, you know, yelling and shouting. It's confusing. So a good steady example is worth a lot more than somebody who has to be yelling at every piece of whatever it is that they're trying to lead. So if you're starting on a big job and you have a good first day at work, you get a lot done, but you stop there, you're not going to get paid for the job. You have to keep on working. And it's that way with our commitment to God. We might feel like we have accomplished a victory, or we have done something for God. And so we say, there, that's what I did for God right there. And that's not how it works. We need to stay committed. Missions get started on inspiration, but it takes commitment to maintain them. Outreaches and church planting come from great ideas, but things don't get done unless people are committed to working together. It makes for happier people. Another tidbit from that study that said that Americans under 50, the majority of them think it's better just to live together than be married. Interesting tidbit from that same study is that people who are married are happier than people who are unmarried living together. Why is that? Well, again, I think a big part of that is because there is a certain settledness of mind that comes with commitment. When you have a clear goal in mind, there's a certain peace that you can have. And it's the same with our commitment to God, that when we have a clear goal in mind that we're going to live for God to the best of our ability all the time, there's a settledness of mind that can come over us, that can make us actually happier, better people. And then, of course, there's the reward that God has for those who are committed. Matthew 25, his Lord said unto him, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of thy Lord." In Revelation 7, he said to me, "These are they which came out of great tribulation and have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. Therefore are they before the throne of God and serve him day and night in his temple. And he that sitteth on the throne shall dwell among them. They shall hunger no more, neither thirst any more, neither shall the sun light on them, nor any heat. For the Lamb which is in the midst of the throne shall feed them, and shall lead them unto living fountains of waters, and God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes." And that is the reward of commitment, that in the end, we too can see God. As we live our lives dedicated to him, persevering for him, we too can see God. We can see him in our lives. We can see him right now as we're committed to him. But finally, we can see him face to face. God uses committed individuals, not sleeper agents. He stands with us as we stand for him. Be strong, and the Lord will reward. Let's kneel for prayer.